big show for you here today. Jory Epstein is with us, senior Yahoo NFL reporter. We got so much to get into. Free agency is happening. DK Metcalf traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers. What do we think about his fit in this new offense? He leaves behind a Seattle Seahawks team that is in major transition because Geno Smith is out the door and Sam Darnold is in. What is going to happen to both those offenses after a quarterback change? Then we tell you the moves that move the needle and the moves that quietly tell us something, like what is going on with the Indianapolis Colts right now. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is, baby, it's a hell of a day to talk ball because so many things have happened in the NFL world. And joining me to do just that is our good friend, Yahoo Sports senior NFL reporter, Jory Epstein. Jory, what's going on?
Matt, everything's going well. Free agency. I love when people are talking and they're like, well, now we have legal tampering. And I'm like, yeah, but at this point, everything seems to be done in the illegal tampering period. I loved when I did a free agency winners and losers post for Yahoo, and someone responded to my tweet saying, how could Aaron Rodgers be a loser? We haven't even started free agency yet. And I'm like, yeah, but did you see everything that just happened? Because we are making moves here.
Yeah, I'm not even referring to the legal tampering period anymore. Free agency starts at noon Eastern on Monday, okay, as far as I'm concerned. Frankly, Jory, it's disorienting the fact that this whole process actually started at like 6 p.m. Eastern on Friday as I was sitting in a hotel room in Boston. So, I mean, I feel like we're way behind at this point, honestly, on this podcast. We have a lot to catch up on here. So let's waste no more time. Like I said, we are going to recap everything today. Before we do that, I do just want to recognize a little bit of a new era for the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast podcast here, because we are live on YouTube as we record this. Not all of our podcasts and our shows are going to be live on YouTube, but I will try to do my best out there on social media. I'm on Blue Sky now, Jory, because I was finally broken with, I mean, Twitter going to break on the first day of free agency. We're losing the plot over there on that app. So both apps, I'm going to let you know where we are going live. So I'm going to do my best to do that. But for those listening, nothing really changes for you. We continue to march on here as the podcast goes. With all that said, here's how the show is going to go down today. In the first segment, we are going to look at the biggest name brand moves. You know which ones we're talking about here. DK Metcalf. We're talking about all the Seattle stuff. In the second segment, we're going to look at the moves that move the needle. And then in the final segment, we're going to look at the moves that quietly tell us something. And this is where Jory's expertise is really going to come into play here. So let's get into the first segment here, Jory, the brand name moves. And let's try to unpack this entire Seattle Seahawks situation here. And let's actually go move by move on this one. So we're going to start with Geno Smith traded to the Las Vegas Raiders for a third rounder. Jory, when you saw this move again on Friday night, what was your first reaction?
Happy for Brock Bowers. I feel like that's very relevant to your audience. I mean, think about what he did without a solid or even average situation at quarterback. And now he's got Geno Smith, who has been a very solid and I would say good, very good quarterback over the last few years in Seattle, really had that resurgence that so many former Jets quarterbacks do in the league. So you get a quarterback in there who you're saying it doesn't take 3 years for this guy to be able to put your team in contention in a crazy division. Maybe not Super Bowl contention, but at least like they should give people a run for their money. And I think when you look at it, who was the head coach that brought Geno Smith to Seattle? Well, that's Pete Carroll. Now Pete Carroll's in Las Vegas. And so we see this Seattle move where, hey, Mike McDonald's the head coach now. We have a new offensive coordinator. We'll get to that in a minute. But this is not the quarterback that those guys had brought in. And so sending Geno Smith and his contract somewhere else, I don't think Seattle looked at this and said, we don't want Geno anymore. I think they said, we don't want to pay Geno what Geno thinks he wants to make, which is fair for Geno to want that. And so we would rather try and build around it. What went through your mind from a Las Vegas standpoint, other than, hey, Tom Brady doesn't have to just shudder when he thinks about his quarterback situation?
Yeah, actually, it's funny you mentioned Tom Brady, because my first thought, because Patrick Klebein and I were just talking about this last week, like, what is a Tom Brady quarterback? Because in my mind, it's like, I don't know if I really see Sam Darnold being like a Tom Brady style quarterback. And, you know, obviously I get why he would pursue Matthew Stafford, right? Stafford is pure pocket passer. He doesn't have to do any of the pure progression nonsense. He can get up there and say, all right, this is cover one. This is where I'm looking at pre-snap. I can do that. He can activate all blades of grass. That was the famous line when the Rams traded for Matthew Stafford back in the day. Well, Geno Smith is kind of like the Bud Light version of that. I mean, he doesn't have Stafford's arm talent. He also makes more questionable decisions than Matthew Stafford, but he's a pocket passer. He can go downfield. He can read out the entire field. I think he's been very underrated in that. And my second thought then, besides the fact, like, okay, so I guess a Tom Brady quarterback is Geno Smith. I can kind of see why that is from the pocket ability, the pocket movement ability, the accuracy overall. My second thought was, oh, I love how Geno Smith fits in this Chip Kelly offense, or at least what I'm imagining a Chip Kelly offense to be. It was on my radar last year with the Seahawks offense that Geno was like a more, not, I'm not saying he can't go under center, but I think he did his best work out of the gun, whereas their run game was better under center. Chip Kelly's going to want to run from the gun. He's going to want to throw high percentage passes from the gun, which both I think fits with Geno Smith. And like to your point, Andy and I are going to do the free agency fantasy winners and losers, actually another live show, spoiler alert, on Thursday morning. Brock Bowers will be featured prominently in that because I get to see him being the first read of so many concepts. And I think Geno can get it out quick and accurately to him in that area.
And I think what goes through my mind is if you're Tom Brady, if you're Mark Davis, if you're the Raiders, and as we've talked about when you and I were on the show together during the combine, Tom Brady is a very strong influence on everyone from the head coach to the general manager to the owner. You have to say, well, what is our option this year? Do we want it to be something in the draft? Well, the thing about waiting for the draft is the Raiders thought they were getting Michael Penix last year. They thought Michael Penix Jr. would fall to them. They would have an option. Maybe he wouldn't be excellent in his first year, but he had the tools and it didn't work out. And they also won some games at the end of this year that are going to impact their draft ability. And so I think, or draft spot, I should say. So when you look at this, you now have an option that you should feel comfortable with for the next couple of years. I don't think that if you're Tom Brady or if you're the people running this organization that you think Geno Smith is your answer for the next 5 to 10 years. But I think that you could feel good about him for the next couple of years. I think you draft a quarterback in the mid rounds that you want to develop behind him. And oh, by the way, if you're trying to show someone how hard work can pay off over time, well, who's a better poster child than that for that than Geno Smith, who had his resurgence so late in his career? And now you feel like we can play the draft a little more honestly. And the last thing I'll say is when we watch those Tom Brady broadcasts, what was so funny about Tom Brady in his first year broadcasting for Fox is he would look at these quarterbacks and say, that was a D+ throw. That was a B- throw. And I'm like, why are you telling us this, Tom? But part of it was because he wasn't in the building talking to all of the players and coaches due to his status as minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. So when I think about him in meetings, I just say, Tom Brady wants the quarterback who he doesn't have to feel like D+ throw coming at all times.
Yeah, and like Geno is going to give you those D+ throws, but very infrequently, or at least I should say not frequently enough to be a backbreaker for your offense. I will, when we talk about the Seahawks side of this and kind of why I think part of the reasons why they made the move is that he did have some truly backbreaking mistakes at different times. But like I think the good throws outweigh the bad for Geno. And it comes back to what you said earlier, which is, What was the alternative here for the Raiders? I mean, it's going to cost you, you know, pretty penny. He probably wants $40+ million a year. But it costs you a third round pick. You have the cap space to spend on Geno for the next maybe 2 to 3 years. I'm sure he wants a 3-year deal that'll probably end up being a 2-year deal. That's how this stuff always goes. So the next 2 years, you've got cap space. That's fine. It's a third round pick. Like, you were going to hope Shedeur Sanders falls to you. Is Shedeur Sanders going to be better than Geno Smith?
I think they're still hoping that. It's not going to happen, but the hope is still there.
I think there's a chance he might fall there and maybe even farther. Like, he's New Orleans Saints at 9 is kind of on my radar for Shedeur Sanders, but that's a separate conversation. I think, like, okay, but still, you're not going to be better next year with Shedeur than you are with Geno Smith. And then, like, look at the rest of the free agent quarterbacks. Like, if Sam Darnold wasn't their guy, they're not doing the Aaron Rodgers dance. Russell Wilson's, you nailed this completely about the Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson thing when we had this conversation at the combine, when he said, oh yeah, the Russell Wilson we drafted, that turned out fine. Well, he's not going back to fine. He's going back to the quarterback he really loves, which is still Geno Smith in Pete Carroll. So again, like, if you are invested in Brock Bowers, you're invested in Jacoby Myers, who I think is a really underrated player and a nice fit in this offense as well. We showed that we can show the depth chart again here, maybe because we were looking at it earlier. There's a lot of other like holes in terms of the slot receiver, the other outside receiver, the running back rotation. I mean, we put Zamir White up on that depth chart earlier. They don't want Zamir White touching the ball ever again for the Las Vegas Raiders. So those players, although whoever those guys are, much better situation now with Geno Smith at the quarterback position here.
When I think when you look at the depth chart of these respective teams, that's how we got here with Seattle. Because again, it's not that Seattle didn't want Geno, but they had to say, Geno, at the price point he believes he should be at, or at the price point he wants, with the roster existing at that level, are you going to get somewhere? Are you going to be able to compete in the division? Are you going to be able to eventually keep up with an Eagles or Lions-like team in the playoffs? Or maybe I should be saying the Commanders when you look at what they did this year. And I think ultimately this Seattle team said, no, we're not. We don't have the depth to be able to give Geno what he wants. And we think instead, well, if we can give Sam Darnold an offensive line, because again, Sam Darnold's tail off at the end of last year did coincide with the health of his offensive line tapering off as well. If we can do that, if we can give him really what comes down to financially a Baker Mayfield deal, if you look at those two deals, what Tampa did for Baker Mayfield and now what Seattle is doing for Sam Darnold are very, very similar, a tiny bit just so the agent can say they got more than that. But that's what it is. It's, hey, you've shown that for a year, you've done something good. In fact, his production in a single year was better than any single year production that Geno Smith had as the Seattle quarterback. He hasn't sustained it, but we think that if Sam can play at a certain level, and we now have a third round pick for Geno, a second round pick for DK Metcalf, we'll get to that. Oh, by the way, you have financial flexibility. I think it's something like 5 picks in the top 92 for the Seattle Seahawks. They're going to be able to build around Sam Darnold. So they are not asking Sam to come in and say, you have to be the be all end all here.
Okay, let's talk Sam Darnold. Let's get to that before we get to DK Metcalf. Obviously, yeah, everybody knows DK Metcalf's not going to be on this roster. We can have this conversation with that as a clear understanding. So they're replacing Geno Smith with Sam Darnold. That was, again, as soon as the Geno Smith news starts coming across your timeline, everybody starts kind of, the wheels get turning here. Are they going to become a Sam Darnold team? They do end up becoming the Sam Darnold team. He signed to a 3-year just over $100 million contract. Like you said, this is basically the Baker Mayfield deal, which is funny, Jory, because even when Sam Darnold was on his hot streak this year, I kept thinking he's going to get the Baker contract. Like, that's a perfect contract for Sam Darnold. And he ultimately, when everybody's at the end of the year, oh, look at him, he's costing himself some money, he ends up right at the contract that at least I always thought he was going to end up at, right over just $100 million, just a bit over $30 million per year, but not quite that top tier money. Makes total sense. So it's a cheaper quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. It's a younger quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. As much as I like the Geno Smith trade for the Las Vegas Raiders, and at first blush, I was kind of like, what are they doing? I can kind of get my mind around their approach here. I think the fact that Geno's age, like, is consistently glossed over by the people who are very, very against this move. He's a 35-year-old quarterback. We're all kind of spoiled with quarterback age because of the Tom Brady stuff, but there's no guarantee that Geno is going to play well into the next 5 years or anything like that. Now, for Sam Darnold this year, I don't know. What was your reaction to Sam Darnold kind of becoming the clear-cut starter for the Seattle Seahawks?
Yeah, I didn't think that going back to October, even into November, Sam Darnold would be at this level. I think beforehand, he was probably a $40 million a year quarterback. Now, again, that might sound crazy, but you have to remember, Dak is now a $60 million a year. We have these guys at 53, 55, increasingly going up. We'll get to Josh Allen maybe later in the show. And so when you look at it, I think he probably went somewhere from high 30s, 40 to low 30s per year. But decent guarantees, better guarantees than he would have gotten if it was just the Vikings franchise tagging him. And I think we also have to remember that could Geno Smith have adapted to this new offense? Yes, but this is not the same offensive coordinator, the same scheme that Geno's been playing in. They're bringing Clint Kubiak in. So this past year, he was the New Orleans Saints offensive coordinator. This is a new offense for anyone to learn. Well, if you go back 2 years, where was Sam Darnold? Where was Clint Kubiak? Both in San Francisco. So now they're reuniting. They have a familiarity with each other's philosophies and strengths. Sam might not know the exact terminology that he's choosing to use, but he understands the influence from which it's coming. And then you have Clint who says, well, all right, early downs, get the keeper, get the play action, have a bunch of run game type concepts, be efficient on dropback passing later on downs. And now we can start to play to Sam Darnold's strengths. And I think that, you know, there are some people around the league I've talked to who say, even going back to Carolina, because I was asking people, when did you start to realize that Sam Darnold had more in the tank? Because even before last season, before that J.J. McCarthy got hurt and we knew he was going to be the guy in Minnesota, I had an NFC executive tell me last training camp when I was talking about quarterbacks that may or may not have been ruined. He said, for what it's worth, I don't think Sam Darnold's at that level yet. I still think he has something. Obviously, that bore out. And I'm not saying that in Seattle, he's going to have Justin Jefferson or the complement of talents that he had around him in Minnesota. But I do think he's going to have a coaching staff that understands some of what they saw in Carolina, even going back, some of when he has the ability to be patient, when he has solid protection, he can run the offense efficiently.
I'm so glad you brought up that Carolina offense, because I can remember from the point where not originally when he was playing with Carolina, it was after, I think it was the season where they fired Matt Rhule. Steve Wilks took over as the head coach, and Baker Mayfield was the starter at the beginning of the season. Then he was released, went to Los Angeles with the Rams. They were playing like PJ Walker for a hot second there. But then Sam Darnold got back in the mix. And from the moment Sam Darnold started again, and they were really running the ball well, they were playing good defense, they had DJ Moore and nobody else, so it was just one guy to get the football to, Sam Darnold and Jared Goff were the top two quarterbacks in adjusted yards per attempt at the end of that season. I specifically remember this because I think I tweeted about it like years ago, and it was just Sam Darnold's face or whatever, so I can remember looking this stat up. And that was really when you first saw that was not a great situation in Carolina. But they were running the ball well. They were kind of putting him in like a little box, you know, and just said, hey, Sam, operate this little box. Operate within this little box.
Right.
And he could get that done. Now, I think Seattle signing him to $100 million is hoping – maybe they're not hoping that you're putting up the numbers that he was last season, right, where it's this this crazy passing production, high-level stuff. They're probably hoping for not that, but maybe somewhere between – Sam Darnold keep the train on the tracks, but you're like a steady starter in Carolina at the end of your tenure and the dynamic player he was last year.
Right. And I think, again, going back to that Carolina, what's funny is that when I talked to people who evaluated that part of his game, it wasn't the 3-touchdown game against Tampa Bay that was really what spoke to them. It was actually the win over Denver when his numbers were pretty modest, 164 yards, 1 touchdown. Again, this is going back to November 27th, 2022. So I know we're taking a bit of a trip down memory lane. And they said, okay, but Sam wasn't seeing ghosts. He was patient. And so when you look at what happened at the end of the Minnesota tenure, there was that question of, is Sam seeing ghosts as we felt like he was at the end of his Jets tenure? Is he back to that psychological inability to kind of keep patient, not be too concerned if the rush is coming? Part of this is he needs to get the ball out a little more quickly than he did at the end of the Minnesota season. But part of those 9 sacks in the playoffs against the Rams, or the playoff game against the Rams, I should say, was what was going on with the offensive line. And so I think the two are hand in hand, and to think of either what the offensive line was doing or Sam Darnold was doing without the context of the other is just a little bit disingenuous.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. 16 touchdowns, 3 interceptions on play action last year for Sam Darnold. That's going to be a base part of this offense. So I think from like a fantasy perspective, I think it's fine for the Seattle offense overall. Like, I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba, now that we're losing DK Metcalf and we're losing Geno Smith, but we're gaining Sam Darnold, I actually think that is probably a good move for him. Like, I think he can have numbers that's similar to what you're seeing on the screen here. Like, 100-plus catches, I think, is still within the range of outcomes in this offensive environment. But they do have to fix the offensive line. Like, if they don't address the interior offensive line, if John Schneider and the guys don't break the cold streak that they have on the interior offensive line right now with those, like you mentioned, all the picks in the top 92, then this looks a lot worse if we get to week one and they haven't addressed that. But let's talk about DK Metcalf here, who's also no longer going to be on the Seattle Seahawks. He was traded to Pittsburgh Steelers for a second round pick. The Steelers are also going to sign him to a deal that's 5 years, $150 million. Now, Jory, because you're a sharp as hell reporter, you know this. I haven't seen the guaranteed monies anywhere with this deal. when you don't see the guaranteed money, you know, there's a little bit of funny money perhaps going on here. And especially a 5-year deal. Nobody signs 5-year deals anymore at the wide receiver position. These guys are all signing like 4, 3s, things like that. So we can just kind of not overreact to the APY for DK Metcalf here, because again, I think there's some funny money in the back end, but they're paying a bit. They're paying a lot to get DK Metcalf in here. They're paying for certainty at the wide receiver position after they've had a couple of, you know, mercurial players taken on the second day of the draft of late. They're paying for certainty, which they've been trying to do for a while as they've hung out in the veteran trade market for Ayuk, Davante Adams, etc.
Yeah, I think let's talk Seattle and Pittsburgh for DK Metcalf. Seattle losing DK Metcalf, you have to realize that on one hand, there probably isn't a receiver that you feel like right now in the 2025 draft will be able to do what we've seen DK Metcalf do in Seattle. I've talked to multiple people in the scouting community over the last week for a story I'm working on, and there really isn't a receiver who anyone feels like can do everything. Now, I had someone in the scouting community say that if you want a role player at any particular role, you could probably find that. You never know what people will develop into. But I think that's where you get to it in Seattle is, well, if they're getting a pick back from Pittsburgh that is actually going to be higher than the pick they ultimately got DK Metcalf with, then you have to realize that it is unfair to say they will for sure be ending up at a downturn, particularly over the course of 2 to 3 years, as opposed to just 1 year. Now, on the Pittsburgh side, they really wanted Brandon Ayuk last year during training camp. I mean, the whole question, I remember I was at, I guess it was Raiders training camp. Brandon Ayuk's agent is there. He's on the phone. We're all wondering, while you're on the phone, are you going to be sending him to Pittsburgh? Because Pittsburgh was ready to give him all the money, roll out the red carpet. They didn't ultimately get Brandon Ayuk. He stays in San Francisco. So they have wanted an upgrade at receiver. Like you said, someone who is less mercurial than George Pickens and many of the guys who have come through those Pittsburgh halls. And I think what's interesting now is, well, he was willing to go there not knowing who the quarterback is. So that's what's kind of interesting when you think about, is this money? Is this he wants to win now? Does he feel really strongly that Aaron Rodgers is going to be his quarterback before long? If so, do we feel like George Pickens runs down one sideline and we got DK Metcalf running down the other and Aaron Rodgers just airing it out? That to me is fascinating. And oh, by the way, the Steelers lost Najee Harris. So we really feel like from an air standpoint, like this is not a Steelers team we've necessarily seen had success in this way, but it'll be interesting.
I don't want to assume too much about like what the roles of George Pickens and DK Metcalf are, because I think George Pickens is getting traded. That's been one of my offseason predictions. I don't think he's on this roster by the time the draft happens. So I don't want to spend too much time like imagining what these two guys look like here. But when you're talking to people in the wake of this move, where is the league at in terms of DK Metcalf? Because I know I've got some thoughts after charting him for reception perception, but I want to hear what you think and what your sources are saying at this point.
I mean, this is still a productive receiver, and I think the question is, what are you looking for at receiver? But again, he's coming off 3 years where he's basically been a 1,000-yard receiver every single year in Seattle. He's averaging 1,108 yards per year, 8 touchdowns per season over the course of a 17-game season. Obviously, some are 16, some are 17. And so I think that he still has the athleticism. He still has the strength. He still has that ability. He needs some of that. I mean, who are they trying to trade for? Mike Williams? Like, to me, it's not, are you getting Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase out of this, is are you upgrading your receiver if you're Pittsburgh? And the answer is yes.
Yeah, I kind of like that, just straight to the point. Like, yeah, it's better. I mean you called me out for throwing shade at Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, that was some Mike Williams shade right there. I mean, Joy, give me a break. Mike Williams just taking a stray out of nowhere. But I mean, but you're right though. Like, that's the stuff they were doing last year. It was basically George Pickens and insert create a player here. I mean, now it's going to kind of be, if Pickens gets dealt, like, I think it's going to be DK Metcalf and create a player here, probably, unless they go round one receiver, which, by the way, I still think is on the table, because the types of receivers that are going to be available to them late in the first round are very different than DK Metcalf. But that's almost to the point about why Metcalf is interesting here, because he's very singular. Like, he's a true X receiver who, he wins downfield, not because he's a big contested catch receiver. His contested catch rate this year is actually terrible. It's 40%, which is the lowest I've charted for him in any season. But he can still run by the entire defense at his frame, which is impressive. But I do think some bad habits have crept into his game. I think like he drifts on routes. His success rate versus zone coverage in reception perception last year, Jory, was 71.3%. I'm going to give you four seasons, actually, of players that were right around 71.3% in my database. 2020 Jalen Reagor, 2019 Devontae Parker, and two Alan Lazard seasons, which first thought, why have I charted multiple Alan Lazard seasons? That's a question, you know, for another time.
I'm a pro Alan Lazard person. Super.
You're the one.
But continue, and then I do have a thought, but finish what you're saying. Yeah, you can have Rashad Bateman. I'll take Alan Lazard. Everyone will be happy. Carry on with what you've charted.
I'm taking my side on that debate literally any day of the week. But we'll put a pin in that. We'll come back to that one. But in terms of, again, that company that he's keeping there, not ideal. Like, and I think that speaks to some of the inconsistencies that was present in his game last season.
I think part of what I look at when a team makes a trade at a position or even extends a player to position is when they are considering the draft, how confident do they feel like they can be that they will find the answer in the draft or otherwise in free agency, but really in the draft is what we're talking about here. What is the replacement cost? Well, when I look at who the Steelers have taken at receiver recently, they took Roman Wilson in the third round, George Pickens in the second round. We'll give them that. Although again, some of the off-field issues have become on-field issues. Calvin Austin in the fourth, Chase Claypool in the second, Deontay Johnson in the third, James Washington. I mean, I don't think we should feel pretty good. I guess Juju was back in 2017. It's been a while since I think we should feel great about the way that the Steelers have drafted receiver and or prioritized receiver in the draft. And so if I'm them and I'm like, I need a receiver and I don't trust my ability to get it, I should probably go get one in free agency. The same way I was talking about the Cowboys signing defensive tackle Oso Digizua, because they have been notoriously bad at evaluating and developing defensive tackles. So I think if you're Seattle, you've had a series of good receivers come in there and really make their way in Seattle and come up and some play again with alongside each other and also have success elsewhere at times. Seattle has a much better track record, and I'm curious if you agree, given what you've charted at receiver and at evaluating receiver and finding them in the draft, than Pittsburgh does.
I mean, Jory, I think you should take a bow and walk off the set at this point. Don't, because we have a lot more show to go here, but you should take a bow and walk off the set for that analysis here, because everybody in media just always parrots like Steelers, draft wide receivers, they always hit, they always hit, they always hit. There's as many misses as there are hits, and you just read them off there. And some of the guys like, yeah, they look good for a minute, but do they sustain success? And there's a reason, like, man, they keep getting all these talented players on day two. Why might they be available on day two if they're first round talents? I mean, you're taking risks on these players, and sometimes those risks work and sometimes they don't. Sometimes, yeah, you get Juju Smith-Schuster in the second round. Sometimes you get Sammy Coates on the second day of the draft. Right. So, okay, there's a wide range of outcomes there. Bottom line about DK Metcalf in Pittsburgh, I think that it's a good fit in Arthur Smith's offense. That's the part that we'll break that move down more throughout the course of the offseason. But I like him running those in-breakers on play action. But from a fantasy perspective, we got to figure out who he's catching passes from before we do too much more analysis there. We know who Devontae Adams is going to be catching passes from, because he signs a two-year deal worth up to $46 million with the Los Angeles Rams. He'll be catching passes with Matthew Stafford. He's going to be running routes alongside Puka Nacua. Jory, can you give me any reason why this is not a slam dunk move by the Los Angeles Rams?
First of all, really reasonable deal when you look at what he's making compared to someone like a Justin Jefferson or like what we expect Jamar Chase to be getting, which, by the way, that deal is only going up because Bengals de facto GM Duke Tobin said he'd be the highest paid non-quarterback. And now we have Myles Garrett signing a deal worth an average $40 million per year on new money. Now, maybe Duke will try and say, well, that's new money, not over the course of the deal. But anyway, I digress. With Devontae Adams, first, the number one thing I think when I see this is, if you're Aaron Rodgers, like, you cannot be feeling good with the Rams right now. You were hoping they would move on from Matthew Stafford. From all accounts, it seems like he was willing to play for the Rams and with Sean McVay for less than Matthew Stafford. You don't get that job. You don't get to play near home. Stafford keeps it I think he's a better quarterback than Rodgers right now, but I would not be surprised if Aaron Rodgers does not feel that way about Matthew Stafford right now. And obviously, like, Aaron Rodgers' peak, like, he is a four-time MVP. And oh, by the way, they just signed your best friend and favorite receiver, Devontae Adams. So, like, everything you want from a location coach and receiver standpoint are in Los Angeles and you're not there, and as all these quarterback dominoes are falling, you are still unsigned. So that to me is what's going on, is that the Rams are just like, yeah, sorry, Aaron, we're not doing it for you.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, maybe when he gets out of the sound bath or whatever, he'll finally figure out what's happening in the NFL world. By the way, I shouldn't dunk on sound baths. Sound baths are great. I've done a sound bath before. It's a hell of an experience. Anyways, again, a topic for another show. We'll cover that after the Alan Lazard, Rashad Bateman debate in the bonus section of the pod. But I love this move for the Rams. Davante Adams, you know, he fills that X receiver position that they desperately needed. Like, number one, they've been hunting for this player for a while, right? They did sign Allen Robinson in free agency a few years ago that did not work out, but it's basically they're hoping for kind of the same role here, that it's a perimeter X receiver. They had great success with Odell Beckham in this role as a rental on the way to the Super Bowl. They've had, like, Brandon Cooks, Sammy Watkins as like that X speed X receiver. Like, Adams is not going to be that guy, but he can win vertically. And I also think, Jory, the fact that Adams was like a 40% slot player for the Jets last year also matters here, because he gives you more positional versatility, more man coverage beating ability than Cooper Kupp does, certainly at this point in his career. But also, like, the fact that he plays some slot receiver is going to allow you to play Puka Nacua outside. The fact that Adams is a traditional X is going to allow them to move Puka around the formation. So I know there's some fantasy people that will be like, oh, is this a downgrade for Puka Nacua? I actually don't think so at all. I think Matthew Stafford can feed two top dog receivers. I think Puka's still the one on this team because of just where he is at this point, versus Adams, still a great player, but slightly declining. Whereas with Puka, again, both these guys can get fed and both of their matchups will be plus because they can both play multiple positions.
Great. We have to remember that it's been several years since Davante Adams has had a play caller that's even close to the level of play caller that Sean McVay is. So if anyone can be trusted to scheme him creatively to make room for him and Puka and Kyren Williams and everyone else on the Los Angeles Rams, I would trust Sean McVay to do it. And when you look at the quarterback, well, receivers routinely have their best years with Matthew Stafford. We saw several people in Detroit go through that. And we saw Cooper Kupp have his best breakout year when the receiving triple crown in Matthew Stafford's first year. And oh, by the way, I think they won the Super Bowl, if I'm remembering correctly. Now Puka Nacua comes. And when Cooper Kupp gets hurt, Puka Nacua's rookie year, despite being a fifth round pick, he has this insane year and sets all these records as a rookie. So to think that Davante Adams has been super dominant, still was over 1,000 yards last year, despite being on both the Raiders and the Jets, neither of which were any good. And now you take this routinely and reliably productive player, put him with a quarterback who maximizes receivers and a coach who maximizes receivers. I'm not saying that he is going to reverse time and age back 10 years, Benjamin Button-like, but I do think we have reason to believe that he should be at least as effective and productive as he's been before.
I always say that analyzing receiver age cliffs and age curves is the thing that I'm least confident in doing with reception perception, because sometimes you see guys just fall off the cliff. Sometimes they kind of do a graceful decline. And with Adams, like, it's easy to say, yeah, he's not the same old Davante Adams. Well, the same old Davante Adams might have been, I think you can argue he's the best receiver in the reception perception era, 2014 to current, because he has like multiple, like, top three seasons in success rate versus man coverage. So yeah, he's not at those peaks, but he's still like the 80th percentile in success rate versus man coverage. So that's still very, very good if you're dropping there. Okay, let's move to the next one here. Texans trade Laremy Tunsil in a 2025 fourth rounder to the Washington Commanders for a package of draft picks. Those picks include going to Houston, a 2025 third rounder, a 2025 seventh rounder, a 2026 second rounder, and a 2026 fourth rounder. So, Jory, this one caught me completely off guard. Did you see this one coming? Was this on anyone's radar? What is the story here with why the Texans are moving Laremy Tunsil?
I have a lot of questions for Houston, because their offensive line was clearly their biggest weakness this last year. When you look at CJ Stroud and why his sophomore year wasn't like his rookie year, it wasn't that his arm talent went away. It wasn't that he wasn't reading the field anymore. It was his protection was terrible and he was constantly trying to overcome it. I was at multiple of those games when he was doing that, including the Jets game, which actually was one of the few Jets wins because the Jets were just destroying the protection against CJ Stroud's line. Now you say, well, we're going to get rid of the offensive coordinator, Bobby Slowik, because he clearly didn't scheme it well. When a year ago, Bobby Slowik was a super hot name and expected to be a head coach and one of the next like Shanahan McVay geniuses. We're going to get rid of him. We're going to get rid of Kenyon Green. Like, we're going to totally overhaul our personnel. You could say that the offensive line didn't perform last year, but do you really think you're getting upgrades? And so to me, it is so fitting that the Texans are sending them Laremy Tunsil to the Commanders. And oh, by the way, they're not getting these draft picks right away. Like, there is a little bit of a delayed gratification on what you're going to be able to do with the compensation you're receiving. And so to me, when I look at it, CJ Stroud in his second year seemed to be playing with a more suspect cast, some of that because of injury. I know that they got receivers, including Stephon Diggs, in his second year, and that seemed to contribute to him coming a little bit back down to earth. Still good, but not that super human, like crazy clean numbers that he had his rookie year. Well, then now Laremy Tunsil is going to play with Jaden Daniels in Washington, who did everything he did, including win rookie of the year, or offensive rookie of the year, I should say, and take his team to the NFC Championship a year after they were absolutely terrible without much talent. And he's just getting more talent. He's getting Deebo Samuel. He's getting offensive linemen. And so to me, that is why you should say that you don't have to worry about Jaden Daniels falling off in the same way that CJ Stroud did, because I think CJ Stroud, it was less about teams figuring out CJ Stroud and more about the cast around him declining.
Okay, but because you said that, let me play devil's advocate here, because I don't know if I totally believe this, but could we also say that the Commanders are doing the exact same thing that the damn Texans did last year, which is, number one, they are literally going to have the Texans left tackle in Laremy Tunsil, who I think the reason he was traded was not necessarily just because of play, although he was the most penalized left tackle in the league. And I don't think he had one of his best seasons, which, to be clear, his best years are like he's the best left tackle in the league or like a top 2-3 player at the position. I don't think he was quite that guy last year. So maybe there's a little bit of slippage there. But also, according to Lance Zierlein, who, you know, lives in Houston, he does Houston radio, he's very plugged in the organization, they were looking for basically culture change in that room, which is, to me, a lot of leadership, right? That type of stuff was kind of the words that Lance kept using. And offensive line, we know, is a communication position. The Texans last year gave up the most yards lost to sacks on stunts last year, according to Fantasy Points data, 217 yards CJ Stroud took. That, to me, speaks to communication issues. Your number one guy in the room is Laremy Tunsil, and he's part of the problem. I realize coaching is an issue too, but he was also part of that problem. The entire room, like, there's got to be some accountability there. And I think that's part of why Houston moved on from him. So he is probably going to upgrade that left tackle position, but still, we've got Deebo Samuel in here. I think he's even more of a declined player based on who he was last year than Stephon Diggs, bringing in a declined player that was also lost to injury halfway through the year. Deebo has issues staying healthy. I don't know. I'm not out on the Commanders, but it's a little bit on my radar that they're spending a ton of money. They kind of seem to just trying to be accelerate that timeline, which, if we look back on it last year, is kind of what Houston also tried to do. Like, we got the rookie quarterback right, let's go all in right away. And it obviously did not work out. They're kind of retooling here in year 3 of CJ Stroud.
I feel like the Texans said, we need to go get weapons and defenders to support CJ Stroud. And the Commanders are also thinking about the protection, which the Texans did not seem to figure out last year, whether that was because of personnel, whether that was because of coaching, whether that was because of scheme. I think you can debate that. But to me, the Commanders are thinking about that. Are they throwing money around? Yes. They also had a lot of money to throw around because they didn't figure it out. And I think devil's advocate to your devil's advocate, which I'm not sure this is true, but this is the best case scenario, is, well, did you think Bobby Wagner had much left in the tank? Did you think Zach Ertz had something left in the tank? Did Tyler Biadasz? I think there are players that they signed, Dorrance Armstrong, who played better than they have played at other positions. And so this Commanders coaching staff that seems to have figured it out, maybe can get something out of you that you're not getting at another location. So I don't think it's any guarantee. And I also think that they're not trading away a ton of compensation. Like, I think they'll still be able to build through the draft, but I think they're saying, we want to upgrade and give more pieces to Jaden Daniels. And oh, by the way, when you think about the window, and I know that this was Bobby Slowick's idea last year and clearly it went another direction, I don't know that Cliff Kingsbury is going to be your offensive coordinator in 2 years. So to me, the window is not just about Jaden Daniels. It's also about taking advantage of the coaching staff you currently have.
Yeah, ultimately, again, if Tunsil's right, he does provide a pretty significant upgrade, which would be good news for everybody on the Commanders offense. Just real quick on Houston, I don't know what to say about them now, because I got to see what they're going to do on the offensive line. You know, they're probably moving Titus Howard to left tackle. That's a one possible solution. But like, I got to see what they do with all of these resources in order to kind of judge that offense. But let's be clear. If you want to draft CJ Stroud in fantasy this year, you want to draft Nico Collins in fantasy this year, you know, I honestly, that's probably, other than Joe Mixon, that's about it. Like, again, they did trade for Christian Kirk. I think Kirk could be an interesting signing, an interesting addition as kind of their vertical slot receiver. But they got to get the offensive line right for all of these guys to hit. Last storyline here in the big names before we throw it a break. Go ahead.
You've got a different tone on Christian Kirk than Laremy Tunsil. And I'm not saying that Laremy Tunsil was playing perfect last year. And I liked that you brought that super specific stat about sacks given up based off stunt miscommunication. Kudos to you for that. Should have said that. But why are you so confident in Christian Kirk? And also, why are you confident that the Texans just giving up pretty significant compensation each year for a receiver to come in and balloon in and be perfect? Like, didn't we see this not work last year?
I mean, I don't know about significant compensation when it's a 2026 seventh rounder.
Okay.
And like, you know, they're going to pay his salary, but he's making like 10 million bucks this year. That's Tutu Atwell money. I mean, like, at this point, like, he's not that highly paid as Christian Kirk. And to be fair, I'm not 100% confident on the Texans. I'm just saying I got to see the offensive line moves before I give it full judgment. And I think Kirk is a nice role player, but I'm still imagining like there's another receiver move here coming. So don't get it twisted. I'm not that bullish on what the Texans are doing. I just think that, again, if they hit the offensive line right, Stroud can have the rebound season. Nico Collins is an elite receiver. Like, these other pieces, honestly, like Christian Kirk or whoever they add, are not that important.
Okay. I'll give you that. Just want to understand the context. And I feel you on the compensation. I think it's 15 and a half base salary, but you're right. It's not breaking the bank, and it's roughly half of what DK Metcalf is getting in Pittsburgh.
Again, Tutu Atwell is making $10 million a year. I'm comfortable with giving Christian Kirk more than that.
15 and a half, but fair. Okay, carry on.
$5.5 million, Jory. All right, fine. All right, Justin Fields, last big name we're going to talk about here. He signs a two-year deal in New York for $40 million. He's now like basically going to be the lowest paid starting quarterback in the league, if you want to think about it that way, on a per year basis, other than guys on the rookie deals. Interesting kind of reclamation project here for the Jets, Jory. I can see where they're going at, but what are people saying about the Fields addition to New York?
Yeah, I think when I talked to people at the combine, the evaluators were saying that they felt like of the free agent quarterbacks, Justin Fields had the highest ceiling. And it wasn't only because of the passing, although I do think that he hasn't been in super great places to succeed, whether it was what he had in Chicago or didn't have in Chicago, really, and being asked to basically be the entire offense there some of that time, and what he was doing in Pittsburgh with Russell Wilson waiting in the wings. Now you've got Garrett Wilson, you've got Breece Hall, you've got Braylon Allen, you've got all these different guys. But I think to me, the biggest thing is when you look at what the Ravens did and the Eagles did this year, they said, if we can take a mobile dual threat quarterback and pair him with a run game, you don't have to be passing all the time, especially on earlier downs. And so now if you can take Justin Fields, I think you can open up a lot with Breece Hall and Braylon Allen, because at all times that run game, now you're going to have the threat that Justin Fields is going to take off, which is pretty much the opposite. It's a palate cleanser from the mobility or lack thereof that Aaron Rodgers had last year. And so I think that the Jets just said, first of all, we want something to keep us at least competitive in the beginning of the Aaron Glenn era. Secondly, if you can lean into the run game, well, then that keeps your defense fresher, and they have great defensive pieces and a coach who's now, another coach who's defensively minded, I should say. So it was Robert Saleh. And then thirdly, if you can do this, I just think that you have the ability to run the scheme and really lean into the run game. And then maybe you take, whether it's a Jalen Miller or someone with that similar play style, ideally you go for a mobile quarterback the way that the Eagles and the Ravens have, that you can develop, and then you can keep that kind of offense as opposed to having Aaron Rodgers for another year and then totally changing the style.
Oh yeah. This to me, I said this to Nate yesterday on Football 301. This is such like defensive minded head coach core here. Like, oh, we've got a mobile quarterback, especially a man coverage heavy defensive coordinator in Aaron Glenn. You know, those man coverage guys don't love going against mobile quarterbacks. You got to turn your back to the quarterback, and they're ripping you for scramble yards and stuff like that. So let's get a mobile guy in here. We had three interesting running backs last year: Braylon Allen, Breece Hall, obviously, and then Isaiah Davis gave him a little something, something. Like, let's get all three of these guys in the mix. Let's, you know, establish the hell out of the run. And we really have one guy we got to get the football to here, which is, of course, Garrett Wilson. And that's interesting, the Garrett Wilson part of this, because Garrett Wilson and Justin Fields played together at Ohio State in 2020. That was kind of like Wilson's sophomore year and Justin Fields' final year at Ohio State. I bet that was part of what made Justin want to fly the coop from Pittsburgh, in addition to the fact that I think he felt a little burned by, hey, you know, you started me and then you benched me and now you're like, oh no, no, come back. We definitely won't bench you again, Justin. We definitely just want you back. No big deal. And whereas the Jets like, yeah, come be our starter. Like, we'll give you $10 million a year and you can play with your former collegiate quarterback, wide receiver tandem there. So again, Wilson, like from a fantasy perspective, is Justin Fields going to be the guy to take him to like that elite tier? You know, he did have a great season with DJ Moore. That was a couple of years ago in Chicago. Like, we've seen that at least. But if that history of the two guys playing together, I think is also important to consider. In addition to the run game, also the pass game as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And to me, the one flaw in this plan as currently constructed is you really need offensive line upgrades. And I do expect the Jets to understand that probably highly in the draft, if not other places like free agency or trade as well. But I think that when you look at what Chicago's doing, and I think we'll get to that, and if you look at what the Jets are doing, the number one difference is like you don't have the offensive line to run your scheme. The Lions defensive coordinator left and is like not yet investing in offensive line in the way that the Lions offensive coordinator left and is doing in Ben Johnson. So I think especially offensive linemen who you feel comfortable run blocking at a really high level, whether or not their pass protection is going to be the same, like that's what I would care about on the offensive line if I'm the Jets, because Justin Fields' mobility can help cover up for some pass protection. But if you don't have those lanes for those guys, I mean, it's going to be challenging.
Look at that. We got Jory's guy, Alan Lazard, out here still on the depth chart. Trade candidate, Alan Lazard. So Jory is certainly caping up for somebody to trade a first-round pick for Alan Lazard. But while she does that, while she hits the phones, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the moves that move the needle right after this. We are back, and Jory, apparently we have breaking news coming back from this segment because this show is live. And no, it's not free agent news or anything like that. Apparently,
did Aaron Rodgers find a team?
No. Actually, it's something even more outlandish than that. Apparently, Andy Behrens is watching the podcast. This is the first time this has ever happened. Famously, Jory, and because you know you're not. You're part of the ecosystem here, but you're not quite as deeply embedded as I am, certainly. Andy is, he doesn't listen to the show ever. He doesn't ever listen to the show or anything of the sort. So the fact that he's consuming the content, that is truly a record-breaking moment.
Yes. Yeah, we're now looking at the YouTube chat. So if you guys are in the chat or watching live on YouTube, feel free to say hello. But we see that Andy said, in all caps, Harmon exposed as a Christian Kirk bro. And that is really validating to me because I was like, am I off base here? But no, Andy and I agree. That is on you.
If you agree with Andy Behrens, not a good sign, Jory. But that is another topic for another day. Okay. This segment is the moves that move the needle, and Barons, get excited here because your Bears are going to be coming up. Of course they are. But before we talk about that, we got to talk about Najee Harris signing a one-year deal worth up to, the phrase of the offseason, up to $9.2 million with the Los Angeles Chargers. Jory, Najee Harris does not go to the Dallas Cowboys, which we, speaking of Andy Behrens, he was just trying to wish that into existence for producer Colin's misery. But instead, he goes to the Los Angeles Chargers. And, you know, I don't know. Najee Harris, not the most exciting running back in the world, but I kind of like this signing by the Chargers. What was your reaction to this move?
Yeah, I think Najee Harris is about to play with the best kid at the pro level, if not ever, in Justin Herbert. I mean, the Steelers have really been a little bit in the quarterback desert for several years now. Even at Russell Wilson's peak last year, Justin Fields' best game, they weren't Justin Herbert and they weren't doing what Justin Herbert was doing. And when I saw this signing, I thought back to my training camp visit of the Chargers before the 2024 season. And I had a conversation one-on-one with J.K. Dobbins. And I kind of came away being like, this could really work. And I was like, am I crazy? Is he just going to get hurt again? He didn't really have any crazy breakout years in Baltimore the way that, you know, Rashad Bateman might have had a crazy breakout year in Baltimore. And then you look at what J.K. Dobbins did, it's like, okay, something's working here. And I think that a Jim Harbaugh schemed offense, a commitment to the run, and the offensive line commitment they've had, I do think that you are really seeing a lot of different things that could work. And so I think Najee Harris will be set up to succeed in Los Angeles in a way that he wasn't necessarily set up to succeed in Pittsburgh. Now, whether he will, I still have some questions. I think that there were multiple challenges toward the end of his Pittsburgh time we don't even need to get into all of them right now, but I think that both on and off the field, he changed over the time in Pittsburgh. But I think that this could be a really good reset for him going back to the West Coast where he's from.
Yeah, it's a 1-year deal too. So the old famous motivation here. I mean, if you think about this too, just from a schematic standpoint, I think one of the biggest misses by people last offseason was, oh, Najee Harris, Arthur Smith, like he's a big bruising back. He's going to be just like Derrick Henry. Well, no, actually what Arthur Smith wants is a guy like Derrick Henry who's explosive, right? He's going to give you those off tackle zone runs, like he builds up the head of steam and he just rips it, right? Najee Harris, not the most explosive dude in the world. He's more of like a grinder back. Well, the Chargers last year were 7th in terms of percentage of gap runs. And I actually think Najee Harris in just like more of a downhill gap-based scheme, he's not going to give them the same explosive ability, even like a guy like J.K. Dobbins who had the explosive runs last year. But the Chargers, I think it kind of gets lost, you know, when because they want to be a run-heavy team. They weren't a good rushing team last year, which is why I think this moves the needle. They were 27th in rushing success rate overall last season. And I'm Harris, while he's not going to bring you much of that explosive ability, he can give you just steady, consistent, positive yardage.
Right. And I think you also have to realize in terms of the value on this deal, the $9.25 million, whatever, that's the max possible, which is highly unlikely to happen. It's really more of like 5.25 fully guaranteed. And so I think that when you think about what they're getting relative to what they're paying, there's a lot of reasons to feel like this is a good value signing for Jim Harbaugh.
I'm glad that you brought up the money too, just like the obviously the incentives, the up to, which again is the phrase of the offseason. I don't think Najee Harris addition precludes them from adding another back in the draft. They could still even bring back J.K. Dobbins. We don't know that as of the time of this live show. We don't know if he's going to be back with the team. I think that's still possible. But if it's Najee standalone in this backfield, I think he actually would. He could end up being a fantasy value, Jory, just because the fantasy community loves to hate on Najee Harris. Like I don't know what it is. Maybe because he was a first round pick, and there's a lot of like analytic bros in the fantasy community that just are overzealous about hating first round running backs. Maybe it's that, or maybe the fact that he's not the most explosive dude in the world. I don't even know. Again, I'm not saying he's a great back or anything, but he's a steady presence. And again, if he's the only dude back there, I think we could get some fantasy value out of this situation.
Right. He's obviously not Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley when you think about running backs that were changing teams last year. And I don't think he's Aaron Jones or Josh Jacobs either. But what you should realize is he's now in an offense that is going to want to give him opportunities because of the way they run their offense. So whether his yards per carry and all of that is going to be great, I don't know. But do I think he's going to get touches? I do.
Yeah, and he's going to score some touchdowns here. He's going to score some touchdowns, that's for sure. Okay, let's move on to the next move that moves the needle here, which is the Minnesota Vikings are spending their freed up quarterback money to fix their interior offensive line and hopefully, fingers crossed, their run game. The Vikings bring in two former Colts on the offensive line. Will Fry signs a 5-year deal for $88 million. Ryan Kelly signs a 2-year deal for $18 million. And the Vikings also brought back Aaron Jones on a 2-year, $20 million deal. So, Jory, I like these additions a lot. Obviously, we also know, as we're showing here, the potential offense. J.J. McCarthy is very likely going to be the Minnesota Vikings offensive quarterback here this season. So I like the move to get Ryan Kelly and Will Fries. They needed to upgrade the interior of their offensive line. That was very apparent during the Sam Darnold collapse at the end of last year.
Yeah, first of all, I just want to give a shout out to producer Colin and everyone working on the show, because these graphics are great and it's so helpful to have this visualization. So I hope everyone watching this is finding this as helpful as we are. Upping our game with these live streams. But I totally agree. I think that, first of all, if you have a rookie quarterback and you're not paying veteran quarterback money, you have no excuse not to invest in your offensive line. And I was in Dallas in 2016 to 2023, but really in 2016, Dak Prescott's rookie year. And one of the reasons he was able to have the start of his career that he was as a fourth round pick was because he had Travis Frederick at center, because he had Zach Martin and Tyron Smith on that line, and really just these monsters who were not only physically so dominant at their positions, but they were also so strong at leading that group. And I feel like a great center is one of the best things you can give to a rookie quarterback. That was one of my questions for the Bears last year, and Caleb Williams, is when I went through yeah, they'd gotten him a fantastic receiver room, but they had a center battle in training camp. And I was like, I don't even care which guy you roll with. I just need you to have a center that the entire time during training camp and ideally OTAs, your quarterback is communicating with the center, whether the quarterback is taking the protections off the center plate or not. Like, I don't care which way it goes, but I need that center and the rookie quarterback to be exactly on the same page. And I totally trust Ryan Kelly to do that. And whether or not he ends up being a physical upgrade from some of the other options they could have had, I think that the way he will be able to lead that group will be really important for JJ McCarthy coming in. And I think, again, this goes back to what we were saying about Sam Darnold, that we can't really overstate how impactful to this free agency cycle the end of the Vikings season was, because it was impactful in terms of how the league viewed Sam Darnold, and it was also impactful in terms of how the Vikings viewed the offensive line they had, JJ McCarthy. And oh, by the way, if he has a little bit of rust, or not even rust, but really just like if he's not 100% healthy and mobile because he is coming back from this torn meniscus that required two surgeries during the year last year, make sure he at least has the protection to get started.
Such a great point about the center stuff. I mean, it's almost like a trope at this point. Get second year quarterback or young quarterback, rookie quarterback, even get that guy a veteran center just to build that relationship up. Like, I remember what a huge deal it was when the Chargers brought in Corey Linsley to pair with Justin Herbert, a veteran center for the Packers. Ryan Kelly, probably a diminished player. He's an older player. You know, he's had some injury issues and things like that. So he's not a completely risk-free signing, but he should completely fill that note there. And also the fact that, like, offensive line, we talk about the Texans, it's a communication-based position. Well, Ryan Kelly and Will Fries have played together already. So their communication, right, when we're passing things off, you know, and that, again, that was an issue with Sam Darnold. Like, he's starting to see ghosts again. Well, that's because the center and the guard are just kind of like letting those ghosts in the damn castle, okay? They're just waving these dudes by because there were communication issues. That's not going to happen here with these two guys because they have already played and they have that chemistry together. And Fries, again, he's coming off an injury as well, but he was playing really well prior to the injury. He's still a young player. He's like a lighter guy too. I mean, he's like 6'6", over 300 pounds, but he can move. So, I mean, lighter guy, give me a break. He's a hoss. But I mean, he's a lighter guy for an offensive lineman on his feet, so he can do some of the zone runs that they want to do. And bringing Aaron Jones back says, to me, they're still leaning into that. They probably will still add another running back in the NFL draft. But again, if we're looking for the run game to be improved, I think this checks both boxes. And like you said, just can't be understated or overstated enough that this is what you kind of need to do for JJ McCarthy. If you're not going to have the same, I think, passing production for the weapons, for the quarterback. But if we're looking to keep the efficiency afloat, this is all a part of that as well.
Right. I love how you said that the offensive linemen are essentially letting the ghosts in the castle, or giving them the keys to the castle, really, in that playoff game. But I think that when you see this, if you can get JJ McCarthy confident that he has the ability to see the game clearly and confidently, and I mean, patiently in some ways at the pro level, which, by the way, if he gets the ball there, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Anderson, like, they're going to catch the ball. If you can have that confidence instilled in him at the beginning of his career, I think you have a totally different look. So really, you don't even have to keep the ghosts out the whole season. Just keep them out for the first 5-10 games, and then he will be able to ward off the ghosts that come later in his career.
I want to draft a running back to this team so bad. Like, this is a great running back class, Jory. And like, Aaron Jones, good player. He's one of like my favorite backs in the league for a long time. He's also just like a gem of a person, but you know, he's getting up there. He wore down as the season went on. And this, again, great class of backs here. I think they could end up being like a value in dynasty drafts, right? Like, oh, well, they're behind Aaron Jones this year. What's really going to happen? And then by the second half of the year, that running back is taking off in the ecosystem. Like, Jory, again, you're well connected. Let's do what we got to do to get a Vikings running back here at some point in the draft.
Well, it's a great year to need a running back and have two good receivers already in house, two great receivers, I should say, already in house. So the Vikings have that going for them in terms of the strengths of the draft class align quite well with what the Vikings need to upgrade.
There's another team in the division that is also remaking their offensive line and also hopes that they have two great wide receivers, and that is Andy Behrens' Chicago Bears. Bear Behrens. I mean, there's something to that there. Chicago moves to assure themselves, I think, both flexibility in the NFL draft amid an interior offensive line overhaul, and also hopes to maintain a good play on offense from the quarterback by boosting the interior offensive line. They signed center Drew Dahlman from the Atlanta Falcons to a 3-year deal for $42 million. And he is going to join the previously traded for Joe Tooney and Jonah Jackson. I want to dive into the offensive line stuff here in a second, but I also want to run this theory by you, Jory, before we get into that. The Bears also spent out the nose to get Grady Jarrett and Dio Odingbo from the Colts. They got hefty deals on the defensive line. Odingbo is an edge player. Grady Jarrett's obviously an interior guy. To me, Jory, this is great team building by the Bears, even if you are paying for those guys. And I'm not 100% sure I love the contracts that Jarrett and Odingbo got. But now at this point, you go into the draft, like we've got the interior offensive line fixed. We've got guys on the defensive line. Again, that gives you a lot of flexibility at the 10th overall pick. If, say, an Ashton Jeanty falls to you and you just want to take the best player available. Or, again, like you don't have to feel forced into doing something at that pick because you've addressed some of that in free agency. This is what free agency is for.
Right. And we're also seeing the Bears look at what just happened in the Super Bowl and say, oh, the team with the best offensive lineman and the best defensive lineman won the Super Bowl. Well, maybe we should invest in the scrimmage and not just be investing in our receivers and our DBs that we kind of saw from the Bears for a little bit. I feel like this is like the opposite team building strategy that we saw last year from Chicago. And to me, what I really like about Ben Johnson is when you look at the success he had in Detroit and how creative he was able to execute the brilliant ideas in his mind because of the offensive line that Detroit had. And I was concerned when he came to Chicago, can you really put that playbook in and expect it with the offensive lineman you currently had? And then you say, okay, well, let's not just get great offensive line who are better and who are veteran and who are going to understand some of these complicated principles. Let's also include a guy like Jonah Jackson who has a history with Ben Johnson. And so I think that sometimes people and coaches in this league run into a problem of hubris of, I don't need that offensive line. It was me. It wasn't the offensive line. And Ben Johnson is not doing that. Now that Ben Johnson is doing his part, you have to say, well, is Caleb Williams going to do his part? Is he going to make sure to get the ball out more timely? Is he going to be willing to kind of take the check down sometimes and get 3, 5, 7 yards, not only go for the big shot? Because he led the league in sacks and sacks yards allowed for a reason, and it was not only because of the offensive line. So now that Ben Johnson has done his part, we need the quarterback to do his part.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Jory said that the Bears are the new Eagles and they will be winning the Super Bowl next year because of these additions. So, I mean, again, you put that clip on social. Put the quote graphic out.
You heard it here first. Matt Harmon said that Jory Epstein said something she didn't say about the Bears being the new Eagles.
Well, if you're going to put out like I'm a Christian Kirk bro, I think, and by the way, I like Christian Kirk. Okay, let's be clear. I like Christian Kirk, but I don't want to get backed into a corner as a Christian Kirk bro. Let's talk about the offensive line. Drew Dahlman, the center, comes over from the Falcons. And I think one of the Dahlman, obviously, I think got a little pop, right? He got a big salary here. People were very excited about him being available free agent because, again, the center effect, what we just talked about. Get a veteran center, get him working with that second year quarterback. But he's, I said, Will Fries is a light guy. Drew Dahlman's actually kind of a smaller center. So he's a better fit in this zone run game, right? Which is great. He comes from the Falcons, who led the NFL with a 71.1% zone concept runs last year per fantasy points data. The Lions under Ben Johnson were sixth at 57.3%. So I think we can check off the system fit bucket here for Drew Dahlman, who's going to line up next to Jonah Jackson, as you mentioned, who also has familiarity. Joe Tooney's an all-pro guard. He can do whatever. So, yeah, I think like if you're trying to over-index on the Rome Odunze second-year bump, if you're trying to get back in on the DJ Moore bounce-back season, you're hoping that Caleb Williams can, like you say, do his part. This is the type of offensive line moves that you wanted to see here.
Yeah, I think that we are building in a little bit more responsible of a way than we did last year in Chicago. And so that should be very encouraging. And I think now the question is going to be, how different do they want this to look in Chicago relative to what I had in Detroit? Because you don't have the exact same skill players. Like, what do you want the run game to look like here? And I would also say, if you look back at what the Bears did during Thomas Brown's 3 games as offensive coordinator and play caller when he was not the interim head coach, that seems to me to be the formula that best works for Caleb Williams. And there was a lot of play action. There was a lot of depending on the run game. There was a lot of, hey, let's try and run some of our runs and passes out of the same looks and the same formations and the same motions so that we are giving the defense a little bit more hesitation. And I think that those 3 games are what I would want to start with if I'm Ben Johnson, because Caleb Williams just had so much instability last year. I mean, you should not have three offensive coordinators in your rookie season. And so I would want to say, well, what was working? And not when was Caleb the most productive, but when was the offense as a whole the most productive, which actually I don't think correlates directly with Caleb's productivity.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. That section of time when Thomas Brown was the offensive coordinator before he was then promoted as the head coach, because that's part of this too. You want Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams like attached at the hip, right? You want them completely like that, to have that symbiotic relationship. That's a big part of it. But also you said it exactly, which is you marry the run and pass game, you run out of the same formations, and having offensive line stability is a part of that too. But I also think just having two receivers is a big part of this too. Like, okay, you can have Tyler Scott in there to clear out space, whatever, and kind of maybe do some Khalif Raymond type stuff, like which was a big part of his role for the Lions, clear some space out for all the fun stuff underneath. You want like Roma Dunze blocking off the edge on some plays, but then you want him kind of chipping and releasing as a receiver. I think you can do that, right? The question to me is just DeAndre Swift, like the running back position, is because that's a guy that Ben Johnson soured on in Detroit. Are we really walking in here with DeAndre Swift as the clear-cut lead back? Because he doesn't fit like the we live in the same world in the run and pass game. So that's still, again, something on my radar here. And if Swift, for whatever reason, is not on this roster and there is a different running back, like that running back's in a great position to succeed from a fantasy sense.
Yeah, I think that is a good point. And again, maybe you should have saved that for the end in terms of the connecting the dots segment, because I hadn't really thought about what Ben Johnson thought previously of DeAndre Swift. Although I think part of that was the contract. And again, it's been 2 years. He's experienced different teams in that time, went to Philly for a year, had a year in Chicago. So I don't think it's a guarantee that they'll get rid of him. I think that there's reason to have that question. And then I think you'll also have to ask yourself the all-important question, which is who is the Dan Skipper in Chicago? Who is going to be our existentially, perennially, and eternally eligible receiver from the offensive line?
Also, Eli Goose in the chats is clipping me admitting I'm a Christian Kirk bro. I mean, this has to stop. My lawyers
yes,
will be involved.
Yes, Ellie, Eli, however you pronounce your name. Please,
hey,
please
do that. Can I also just say for Chris, you know what? I'm just going to say this. I met Christian Kirk prior to when he was drafted when I worked at NFL Network. Great guy. Hell of a person. I could tell he was going to be a successful player in the league because he rolled through his whole like detailed morning shake plan. Like that guy would cared about his fitness. Okay. So you know what? If being a Christian Kirk bro is wrong, I don't want to be right. Fine. Clip it. Put it out on the internet. Last move that moves the needle here before we throw to break. Dan Moore Jr. signed a 4-year, $82 million deal with the Tennessee Titans, Jory. We're back in the trenches here on this one. Number one, good for Dan Moore. This is what happens when you get to free agency. You're an adequate starting left tackle. You get paid like one of the best in the league. That is the definition of free agency. But I don't know, Jory, to me, I think this moves the needle because I think this moves us closer to Cam Ward being the first overall pick. You can heat check me on this. Maybe you disagree with me here, but we're getting a left tackle in here again, who is an adequate player. That means we're going to be able to bump J.C. Latham, the first round pick from last year, back to his natural position of right tackle. The right tackle spot was a mess for the Tennessee Titans last year. They were playing a guy, no disrespect to this human being, but they were playing a guy last year at right tackle who was also moonlighting as a fantasy analyst. Let me tell you what, Jory, I've been bulking up, but I'm not ready to play right tackle for the Tennessee Titans. Let's just say that there. So we might be able to fix two spots here for the eventual number one pick, which I'm starting to think more and more is just going to end up being Cam Ward.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely bulked up enough to play right tackle or left tackle for the Tennessee Titans, whatever you want. So just keep that in mind if you are one of the four general managers that the Titans brought in this offseason. But I think when you look at it, yes,
Jory's
I
getting it on the record.
Agree.
She will accept the $82 million. She will accept the
$82 million. Yes, I will accept the $82 million specifically for the tackle position. I will not accept it for receiver, but specifically for the tackle position, I will accept it. And yes, I completely agree. And if you want proof that I'm not just emulating what you're saying, I had this in my winners and losers post that went up around 2 this morning. Ooh, and I said that Cam Ward was one of the winners of the early wave of free agency. And that's because the first, second, and third pick holding teams or the teams holding the first, second, and third overall picks did not make moves in the quarterback market as we said it a lot of this. I understand we still have Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson on the board. Neither of them are at the beginning of their career, if we want to put it nicely. But I think that absolutely this is a Tennessee Titans team that's saying, first of all, if you're going to get that quarterback, you got to protect him. And second of all, if you want to make an investment in offensive line, well, we actually have Bill Callahan, Brian Callahan's dad, as our offensive line coach, and he's one of the best offensive line coaches in the league. And so you're going to get even more out of these players when you make this investment.
Yeah, I like it a lot. And this is a reminder when we get to draft season, it's like, oh, well, maybe they'll do something different at the top. Nah, probably just going to take quarterback. If they need a quarterback, they're going to end up taking a quarterback. And this is a nice little ecosystem move to boot. Everybody can drink out there. I said ecosystem. That nice little ecosystem boost for the eventual Cam Ward-led Tennessee Titans. Okay, let's take our final break. When we come back, we're going to run through the moves that quietly tell us something right after this. All right, we are back. We are going to get into the moves that quietly tell us something from this year's start to free agency. But before we do that, for our live audience, a couple of chat updates. One, Mr. Scampers says, clip it. Jory admits that she is an $82 million bro. And so am I, for the record. Mr. Scampers wants to admit. So life update. I'm a Christian Kirk bro. Jory is an $82 million bro. I think you're doing better than me in that situation, Jory. I think so. Also, from the chat, we ran a little poll, our Yahoo Sports YouTube chat did. And this is what we asked you all. What is the best new quarterback team pairing? These were the following options. Geno Smith to the Las Vegas Raiders, the runaway winner at 61%. Justin Fields to the New York Jets gets 25%. Sam Darnold to the Vikings, I mean, completely slammed here. Only 8% of the votes. But Jory, Daniel Jones of the Indianapolis Colts gets 4% of the votes. I said Sam Darnold to Seattle, not Minnesota. What an idiot. I'm still living in the past. Anyways, Daniel Jones gets
4%. It's okay. Minnesota is hoping that you're right. They're still mourning this. So, but yes, carry on.
Are they though? No, I think they're squarely in the JJ McCarthy era. Anyways, God, I had a perfect transition to the damn Colts, but I completely ruined it because I stink at this. So Daniel Jones gets 4% of the votes in this. Our first move that tells us something is that what the Colts are doing in free agency right now, Chris Ballard finally feels the urgency. You know this, Jory. Ballard is always a guy that completely kind of sits out free agency. Not this year. Signs Charvarius Ward, cornerback from the 49ers, to a 3-year, $60 million deal. Signs Cam Bynum of the Minnesota Vikings formerly to a 4-year, $60 million deal. I love that one, by the way. That's a perfect fit in Lou Anarumo's defense, which is going to be in the Indianapolis Colts situation now. And lastly, Daniel Jones signed a 1-year, $14 million with some incentives. And they say that this is going to be an open competition between Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson. There's at least some whispers that Daniel Jones might be the favorite to win that job. So the pressure's on in Indianapolis right now. And clearly, Chris Ballard is feeling the urgency.
Yeah, when I have conversations with people around the league about quarterback and how to support a rookie quarterback, it's pretty much the opposite in a lot of ways of what the Indianapolis Colts did. And I struggle with this because when I visited Colts right after Anthony Richardson was drafted, Chris Ballard told me, he's like, look, we understand there are going to be ups and downs. We understand this is going to be a roller coaster, but we didn't want a double or triple. We wanted the home run. We're taking this guy and we're committed to him. I get that Anthony Richardson has not been perfect on his end. First of all, from a health standpoint, that has been a struggle. And second of all, tapping out of the game because he was tired, obviously not a good look for several reasons. But I still think that to come out here and say, we're going to have a quarterback competition even before you had Daniel Jones. To me, one of the quickest ways to ruin a quarterback is to show him that the front office and coaching staff do not believe in him. Because how are his teammates going to believe in him if the coach and the front office don't? Now, what I think is interesting about Daniel Jones, and yes, $14 million is funny because this is basically like if Sam Darnold's contract with the Seahawks is this year's version of what Baker Mayfield got from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Daniel Jones' contract with the Indianapolis Colts is this year's version of what Sam Darnold got with the Minnesota Vikings. So Sam Darnold is at $10 million. Daniel Jones is at $14 million. Adjust for the salary cap increase, very similar. Daniel Jones knows he is going to have the opportunity to compete for this position. that is a huge confidence boost to him, a major confidence drain, I should say, on Anthony Richardson. And now you come in and you say, well, what was Daniel Jones' best year? What did it look like? Well, it looked like having Saquon Barkley there, having a Brian Daboll, so a creative play caller and a great running back. And Daniel Jones is more mobile than he looks, more mobile than we often think of him as. And so if you put him with Jonathan Taylor, I think that he might be able to play his best. Now, I'm not saying his best is going to be top five or even top 10 in the league, but I do think that Daniel Jones at his best actually might be a great fit. And oh, by the way, we've seen Shane Steichen with Jalen Hurts be really effective when he had a quarterback who is mobile with a running back like Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, and this set of receivers, Michael Pittman, Josh Downs, Alec Pierce, Adonai Mitchell, especially if he takes a little bit of a second year leap, that's way better than anything Daniel Jones was working with the New York Giants in that 22 season. I mean, they kind of had to do a pass game by smoke and mirrors basically that year in New York. So I actually do think this presents Daniel Jones a rather interesting ecosystem. You can drink again for the people at home. But I think the Colts are hoping that Daniel Jones's presence basically lights a fire under Anthony Richardson. I think that's the hope, but Jory's not buying it, basically not buying that this is a smart plan. And I'm guessing you think Daniel Jones is making starts for this team this season.
Oh yeah, I definitely do. And I don't think it's going to be very long, because if Anthony Richardson was already struggling to overcome the Colts not believing him much when there wasn't a great option out there, or I mean, I guess Joe Flacco is like weirdly sometimes a good option and looked better in Cleveland the year before than anyone else on that roster, including Deshaun Watson did. But I do think you are saying this guy who believes he can start, who, by the way, part of the reason he's making this money is because I think Minnesota would have been happy to have him as J.J. McCarthy's backup too. They're saying that we don't believe in you enough to keep going. And you have like 1 year. This isn't that Anthony Richardson has played two full seasons and not played well in them. He got injured that first year and then did that. And so I think you have to realize, like, this is just a little bit unrealistic what they're asking of him. And I just think that this is a sign of, we don't believe in you and you're not going to work.
I'm kind of ready to believe anything about this Colts quarterback situation, because it's been so weird basically the last 365 days. So you want to tell me Anthony Richardson plays pretty well, starts all year, I guess I could believe it. You want to tell me that Daniel Jones takes the job in training camp and, you know, actually plays rather decent football, I guess I could believe that too. Or you know what's more likely, Jory? We see both of them this year and everybody gets fired in the offseason. That's probably what's going to happen. But ultimately, again, I'm ready to believe anything about this situation. Let's move to the next one here. Go ahead.
I just think that when the Colts drafted Anthony Richardson, they knew what they were drafting. They knew where his strengths were and they knew where he was raw, and they should have leaned into his strengths and they didn't. And I think that it is hard to come back from that, because they are at some point, you're either creating an offense that plays to Daniel Jones' strengths or to Anthony Richardson's strengths. And I don't look at them as the same. And so I think you have to ask yourself, which one are you doing? And ultimately, that's probably going to reflect the success you have of whether the system you're creating, first of all, when you put in plays, like, how much do you feel like you have to change? And how much are the teammates able to recognize that based off the playbook, we expect one of these guys to be the quarterback?
I do think there's enough stylistic overlap between these guys. Like, they both aren't all that accurate, so you're not looking for like a timing rhythm. That's like being generous, by the way. They're not all that accurate. Accuracy is not the strength of their games, but they will push the ball down the field. Jones, though, you know, he hasn't been as aggressive since a couple of injuries, so that is at least on my radar. But they're mobile threats, so I think they can kind of piece together something that looks like the same offense with both guys under center. But otherwise, I agree with you. The Colts are trying to... They put the cart before the horse, and now they're trying to put the horse before the cart, you know, by like, we just kind of threw him out there early in his career without giving him like a little bit of a time on the bench or anything. And now they're kind of trying to have their cake and eat it too, which you can't do. Although you should. Why would you have cake and not eat it? That's a stupid saying. Let's go to the next team here. Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay, no, I got one last thing. I think I figured it out. I think the best thing the Colts could do is just give Daniel Jones the starting job at the beginning and let Anthony Richardson watch him for like half a season. We saw that benchings don't have to be bad. I think we saw that in Carolina last year. Sometimes when a guy has the pressure off him for a few games, but it's not like you lost the job. It's just like the job is not yours yet. That could be better. And so I think that might actually be better for them than just trying to like see if Anthony Richardson beats him out. When, by the way, when I went through Colts last year during training camp, Anthony Richardson did not look better than Joe Flacco.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's, I don't really know. I don't really know if this is going to work out. That's everything we keep saying here. I just really don't know if this, any of this is going to work out, to be quite honest with you here. Okay. Let's go to the next one here. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they know they're an offensive first team. That's what their moves in free agency signal to me. They bring back Chris Godwin. They get him to re-sign on a three-year, $66 million contract. Allegedly, he left $20 million in free agency on the table from the Patriots and other teams to come back to Tampa Bay. That means that they're pretty confident in his injury status and the potential rehab there. So I think that's good news for Chris Godwin from a fantasy perspective. But they also bring back guard Ben Bredesen, 3 years, $22 million. And this said a lot to me, Joy, because typically the least pedigree starter on a great offensive line just gets overpaid in free agency. But instead, Bredesen comes back to the Bucs. The Bucs not only bring back their entire starting offensive line, they bring back essentially their, well, they do bring back their whole starting offense from last year, which if you're trying to beat losing your play caller, continuity among the players on the field is a huge way to do that. So I think this Bucs offense is one of the best in the league. I think the offensive line is one of the best in the league. And I think it will once again be like a very fruitful environment to collect fantasy players from.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I also think you got to give a lot of credit to Baker Mayfield, because if he was not a guy that these players wanted to play with, if he is not the quarterback who just gives them confidence in themselves and him and in the success of their offense, you just follow the money. And I think that even with Dave Canales leaving and now Liam Cohen leaving, they believe that they have that group. And I think that that is a dangerous, which fitting for Baker to be feeling dangerous. I think it's a dangerous mix.
Yeah. I really like, again, I love Chris Godwin coming back to the Bucs. This is, when we do the fantasy winners and losers, I think he's going to be a pretty big winner from that. So I really like this move by them. And if you're drafting Bucky Irving early, keeping offensive line continuity is huge for this team. So the Bredesen thing really said a lot to me. Let's go to from Liam Cohen's former team to his new team. I think Liam Cohen's trying to fix that run game in Jacksonville. That is what these moves say to me. Patrick McCurry signs a three-year, $37.5 million deal with the Jaguars. He's played a lot of different positions for Baltimore, but I'm guessing that he settles in at one of their guard spots. Robert Hainsley signs a three-year, $20 million deal. He was the backup center for the Bucs last year, but he was their starter before they took Graham Barton. So he's not like a great, great player, but he does at least, again, have some familiarity with the coaching staff. They also signed Johnny Munt to a two-year, $5.5 million deal, which, Jory, Johnny Munt is basically like just running through the McVay tree and just like, oh, you want to boost the run game? You bring in Johnny Munt to do some blocking for you. And they also signed De'Ami Brown to a one-year, $10 million deal to clear out some space as the sacrificial X receiver and a guy that also can play a little bit of slot when they want to kick Brian Thomas Jr. to the outside X spot as well.
Yeah, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I think I was a little anti-Liam Cohen, not because I'm not sure. Maybe he's a great guy. Maybe he's a great play caller. But I was like, didn't Baker already do a lot for the Bucs in his first year with that group before Liam Cohen got there? And so I was kind of like, why are we giving this guy credit when he didn't seem like the variable here? It seemed like the players were the variable. But when you look at it, particularly in the run game, I was surprised to see that the Bucs were actually last in rushing yards and last in yards per attempt 2 years ago. So that means they were the least productive and least efficient rushing offense by traditional metrics 2 years ago. And then they go and they become the fourth in rushing production and the third in rushing efficiency. And so I think that if you can see that drastic, yes, obviously there were some personnel changes as well, but I think that if you can make that jump, like even if you can get up 16 spots rather than 29 spots, I think that you should invest in the personnel and make sure, like Ben Johnson in Chicago and like we're seeing in some of these other teams, make sure that you have the personnel to run the schemes that make you a problem for teams around the league and opponents around the league.
Yeah, and let's be clear, like there was obviously some personnel additions. Bucky Irving was a home run draft pick on day three. Graham Barton adding him, and he just becomes a great center right away, kind of completed that offensive line. You know, Cody Mock improving in his second season as well. Tristan Wirfs being a great player. Like there was more than just Liam Cohen comes in there and spreads his pixie dust and the run game becomes great. But I think conceptually, he brought a lot. Like, again, I think Dave Canales is a very good offensive coach, but all of the motion that Liam Cohen brought in, like some of the pulling blockers and stuff, like there was just a lot more from a conceptual standpoint in the run game as well. And that to me is the big thing in Jacksonville. Like, I'm pretty confident that they're going to get a good season out of Trevor Lawrence, even though I'm kind of, as we talked about at the combine, I'm kind of Trevor agnostic. I think Liam Cohen's going to fix the pass game to a degree because he's got Brian Thomas Jr. Like, Brian Thomas is going to be great. And they've got some, you know, that's a great building block right there. The run game has been terrible in Jacksonville. It's been very unimaginative. The run game, the running blocking has not been very good. And the actual running backs have been a little, okay. It's on my radar that they could, like, the starting back for the Jacksonville Jaguars might not be on the roster, even though ETN's a former first round pick. Tank Bigsby's had some moments. Cohen and James Gladstone are not committed to these guys. Like, they could still add a version of a running back that's more in their image. And that, to me, again, turning the run game around for Jacksonville is just as important as, like, let's fix Trevor Lawrence or whatever.
Yeah, no, I think you make a good point, which is that sometimes we say, let's get the quarterback guru to fix the quarterback. But if the guy's got talent, maybe just give him a run game and a little support so he doesn't have to do everything and constantly be playing Superman. And maybe that'll actually allow him to settle down and play at his best.
Final move that quietly tells us something here. I'm actually not sure how quiet this is, but I think it fits in. If we didn't know it already, Mike Vrabel is definitely the king in New England, because I feel like, Jory, every Patriots fan, you know, is just sitting there dreaming about like Chris Godwin. Or, okay, maybe not Chris Godwin, but let's go get an offensive lineman. We got to do whatever we're going to do to make sure that Drake May has the breakout second season. Well, instead, they spend a grand total of $245 million on interior disruptor Milton Williams, cornerback Carlton Davis, edge defender pass rusher Harold Landry, and linebacker Robert Spillane. The last two guys have familiarity, actually, with Mike Vrabel. Landry, that was kind of a crazy signing there. But again, familiarity. They had absurd amount of cap space to spend. They spend a majority of it on defense. They do add a couple of guys on offense. Morgan Moses to a three-year deal, and Mac Hollins to a two-year deal. $8.4 million there. But again, this just seems like classic Vrabel, right? Like, oh, all these – no, we're not doing offense. We're making this defense better.
Yeah, it's so funny at the I love the combine, thinking that the reason the Bengals were not going to be able to keep T. Higgins was because the Patriots were going to be knocking down the door with an offer so compelling, both for his contract and for the trade compensation, that they were going to get him and give Drake May a guy. And Mike Vrabel's like, actually, I don't need to be this like spectacular through the air team. I need to be a really tough, really physical, set the tone, just blow people up with our defensive line and defensive front type of team. And that's how I'm going to build the culture here, or in some ways reestablish the Patriots culture that he came from. And we're seeing that with the investments. Now, the money is a lot. They also had money to spend. Again, it's not like the cap space you just get to save forever. I get that there are some years you average it over, but when the cap is going to jump the way that it has been in recent years, including this year, some of these guys are just going to get more money, and some of that is to beat them. I also love when we see coaches either get a guy they used to coach or get a guy that they really liked coming out in the eval process, and it's like, no, I've been waiting since the combine in 2017 to finally sign this player. Okay, I'm doing it now.
Even better, I love when you get this guy destroyed us, and this player had his game of the season, and you get the head coach. Well, we got the bonus. We got the double bonus here for Mac Hollins going to the New England Patriots, because Mike Garafolo from the NFL Network, and Colin's going to be so mad at me that I didn't send him this tweet beforehand, but Mike Garafolo from the NFL Network points out the best game of Mac Hollins' career, 8 catches for 158 yards and a touchdown for Josh McDaniel's Raiders against Mike Vrabel's Titans a few years ago. So we get the double bonus there. He had the best game of his career against Mike Vrabel, and he knows the system. Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator. And look, so I'm sure that Patriots fans were probably dreaming a little bit higher, thinking about the wide receiver they were going to add in free agency, than Mac Hollins. But they have like an abundance of slot options in that room right now. Mac Hollins is a perimeter dude who blocks his ass off and puts in a lot of effort. That was an immature wide receiver room in New England last year. So I think that they are hoping that they can still get something out of young guys there that flopped last year, like Jalen Polk, Javon Baker. And if you're going to do that, you kind of need a guy that's going to tone set in that room. And Matt Collins will do that. So Matt Collins, not a fantasy factor, whatever. But I think it's a part of building the room. And Morgan Moses at right tackle is just like, okay, we're going from unplayable offensive lineman to a guy who can viably start for us here.
Matt, I just want to give you a compliment, which is that I appreciate how much as a fantasy show you talk about the lines of scrimmage, because I think that is such like a chestnut checkers move, which is to say that if you don't have the lines of scrimmage settled, you're not going to be having the guys have the fantasy production. So I'm curious if there are fantasy shows out there talking about offensive and defensive linemen to the degree that you are. But I think that it is so relevant to fantasy, even if it is an indirect impact.
I mean, it. Every bit of this matters, like team building, offensive linemen, all this stuff. This is, you know, when you get you do all your fun offseason projections about like, oh my God, you got a three great receivers. How are they going to be stopped on offense? And you get into week one and the quarterback's getting driven into the dirt, like, you know, six times
Chicago
a game.
They're
constantly in second and long. Houston last year, constantly in like second and long situations. Like, Why is everybody not popping off here? I thought this, well, because if you can't block it up, you're not going anywhere from an offensive perspective, because you can't run the ball and you can't protect your quarterback. So yes, even if you don't get offensive line fantasy points, if you're a fantasy show and you're not talking about the offensive line and you're not breaking down the nuances of team building and stuff like that, I mean, you're not competing. Okay. You're not competing. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And again, I think that Mike Vrabel is going to come in and say, no, this is how we're going to play. And Drake May will be able to do a little more of it, what he wants to do, because he's going to be asked to do something different and something a little more reasonable.
Jory, it's always reasonable when you come on this show and absolutely crush it. There's also, you know, shout out to you. There's not a lot of, you know, high level reporters that would come down here and mix it up with us fantasy folks. Okay. So that also sets us apart as a show. So I appreciate the hell out of you for coming on here, for doing this live show as well. This was super fun. I feel like we saw things from a different angle, so that was good. So tell the people what you are working on that they can check out right now.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm working on becoming the right tackle for the Tennessee Titans. So this is actually going to be my transition from high-level reporter to fantasy show to NFL starting offensive lineman or linewoman.
There we go.
I don't know. So there's that.
But
yes, I have had multiple pieces up on Yahoo Sports recently at Jory Epstein on Twitter, Instagram, I think Blue Sky. I forget if it's like B Sky Social. I should be more active there. That will be my NFL New Year's resolution, since tomorrow is the new year for the NFL. So we'll do that. But the most fantasy relevant piece that I'm actually reporting on, I alluded to during the show, which is that I'm really interested in this year's receiver class, because I keep hearing it's a weak receiver class. And I wanted to understand that a little bit better and say, first of all, is it? Second of all, if so, why? And third of all, what does it even mean for a class to be weak or strong? Does that mean that there are fewer first round talents at receiver? Does that mean there are fewer players who you would expect to become a starter in the next 3 years? Is it a certain type of receiver that is weaker? And so I've been talking to a lot of people in the evaluator community, and actually had one source that I'm super excited about writing about, which they were basically taking me through, hey, how many receivers in the top 100 did I have last year? And how many over the last 5 years? And this year there was a smaller number. So I'll save that data for the story, but keep an eye out for Yahoo Sports on that.
Oh, I can't wait to check that piece out. Obviously, it is right up my alley, so that's going to be super exciting. We might have to have you back at some point during draft season to talk about that. But for now, that is going to do it. We are going to say goodbye to Jory. She's been great. Jory and I are going to connect after this to talk through her new meal plan. Jory, if you want to learn how to gain 100 pounds, I can help you with that. In the meantime, though, that is going to do it for this show. On Thursday, we're going to go live once again. Yes, free agency week. It is happening. We are going to be live at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Eastern for the West Coasters. West Coast, get up first thing in the morning. You're used to watching those London games, right?
Listen while you're brushing your teeth. Yeah.
Yeah, this is even better. You're going to pull that laptop out. You're going to pull your phone up, because Andy Behrens is going to join me for that live show as we identify the biggest winners and losers from free agency this week. Bold prediction for that show: Jory will not be in the live chat like Andy was in the live chat for this show. But then again, Jory is going to be in the gym training to be an offensive lineman for the Tennessee Titans. And also, again, trying to get Alan Lazard traded for a first round pick. So she will be very busy. Be sure to check all that out. Until then, we are out.